Welcome back to Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody, part two of a deep diving baseball discussion with Chad Belding, Rob Knatzer of Sierra Strength and Speed, and University of Nevada baseball head coach Jake McKinley. It's brought to you in part by Bad Boy Mowers, power, performance, attitude.
Coach Jake McKinley from the University of Nevada Reno baseball program, we appreciate you being on the show.
An ego doesn't have to be a negative character quality.
We've heard the term, check your ego at the door. I want you to bring your ego through the door, but I need those egos working together. I think that when players ooze confidence, they're dangerous players.
And all championships are hard fought.
When you look at championships and you look at championship players, championship teams, they're always revered in such glory. But I've been fortunate to have won some championships too. And the one thing that I know for sure is when you win a championship, there's turbulence along the way.
This episode of Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody is brought to you by Gator Coolers, Rigid Lights, Mickey Thompson Tires, and Napa Valley Olive Oil. Now for part two.
Last night, Coach, I was watching opening day, Texas. It was Cubs at Rangers. Mm-hmm. Is it Steele, the lefty?
Yeah.
Had an unreal spring. Lefty throwing 92, 93 from the left side. Had an unreal spring in this game right last night. He had like one hit off of him, and the Rangers got to him a little bit, but first couple innings he was dominating like he had been all spring. Bunt to the right side of the field, comes over. Did you see this play?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Flips it to the first baseman, gets him out, but comes up lame on his left hamstring. Mm-hmm. This is their ace. It goes straight to Greg Council in the dugout, the new coach that come from Milwaukee. Now he's the head coach of the Chicago Cubs. And you could tell on Greg's face. And as soon as they showed Council, the announcer goes, man, they're just not very deep in their starting rotation. And you can see, I looked at Council's face at the same time, and it was like all the air of spring training, of the potential of this season. If this kid's hurt, what's he going to kind of do, right? Mm-hmm. The reason I start this question with this, Coach Jake, is how in tune are you with a guy like Rob? We started by saying, man, football's a rough sport. Mm-hmm. Injuries all the time. There's a lot of injuries in baseball that are nagging injuries. Mm-hmm. What does it take to get sat out in college baseball? Do you let a kid play if he's got a little strained hamstring, if he's got a little ligament tear, if he's got something that's not like that needs Tommy John, but he's like, how does a trainer and a coach communicate to make sure that these kids are on the field, but off the field if they need to be?
Great question. So I will say this, like, there's a lot of different, I would call them verticals, that touch players today. You've got your coaches, you've got your development staff, you've got your video coordinators, you've got your medical staff, you've got your strength staff. No one is more important than the other. They all really do have to collaborate and work together. And that can be very tricky because opinions on these situations can be polarizing. And we're fortunate that our trainer and I are in lockstep of like every situation is unique. So I'll tell you, you know, the guy today has an injury that's 3 years old and it bugs him, but he's going to pitch through it. And like, for us, it's management of that. You know, there's actually a funny story. You could YouTube it. I was a graduate assistant at a school in Kentucky back in 2009, and we had a pitcher throw 21 innings. I am not making this up. So he closed the game, 3 innings, started the next game. This was in a super regional. And then he started the next game, went CG, went back-to-back CGs, and he closed the game prior. And we were getting smoked by the baseball community, just like abuse of an arm. But it was also, you know, it was a 22-year-old that was going to be an accountant in 2 weeks. And I think if we didn't give him the ball, he would have murdered me. So I just think, like, to that point, I think in college it's going to be a little more aggressive, especially if it's a player that's maybe not a pro prospect, because this is the last time that they will ever play this sport at a high level. If it is a pro prospect, we're probably a little bit more careful. But I am a coach that's always encouraging players, though, like, just be honest with me. Like, I don't think you're soft if you pull your hamstring and you try to play through it. Like, I don't think you're soft. But I think prevention is also really important. And I think as an industry, we have become so cautious when we're training athletes. So cautious. Like, we're so cautious that we're going to hurt them, that I think sometimes athletes are undertrained. And that's why they get hurt in games. You know, it's like, I think especially position players, like, they don't sprint quite as much as they used to. They don't run quite as much as they used to. And then, you know, they get hurt early in the year because they are sprinting to first base. And you wonder, like, well, how many full speed sprints have you done prior to this point? So it's a tricky question. And I jokingly tell people, because like Tommy Johns are so common, I'm like, hey, if somebody actually knew why they happen so often, they'd be a billionaire, because you'd find a way to prevent it. Really, right? Like, nobody really knows. And I think sometimes when baseball players get hurt, it turns into a game of whose fault is this? And I don't know that it's anyone's fault, but that would be my one thing that I think maybe, and this is, I don't have any data on this, but I just don't think players train as hard as they used to.
I love it. No, it's a great answer. I will tell the athletes, because I deal with them on a different level. Like, if, for example, if I were seeing one of your athletes, Jake, and I'd be like, here's what I think you need, but you need to do, like when I get them to where they're 16, 17, here's my warm-up that I think's really good. But when you go to school, there's going to be certain things your coach thinks are really good. And there might be certain things that you like that nobody's doing. So I'm like, you got to figure out what works for you. But I tell the kids, you got to be honest, you know? So if you're hurting today, talk to the coach, yeah, you know, because they can work with you. If you keep it hidden and you go sprint, they're going to see it. You know, they've been around enough athletes. They can tell when you're not at your best.
Yeah.
So tell him you've got something going on and you're working on it. You're going to get better. So I think that's a biggie. And, you know, like you said, it's every athlete's different. And, you know, some of them just can't avoid that torque in the elbow, and something's going to give. I mean, it's the torque in the elbow that goes on when you're throwing a ball and you get in those positions. It's crazy numbers, mm-hmm. you know? So sometimes trying to mimic that in a training setting is nearly impossible. The yeah. only way they're going to get better at it is to throw. And sometimes the overuse injuries are tricky. I mean, that's what we talk about when we talk about injuries. I'm like, yeah, football's got a lot of acute injuries, but in some of these sports that are long-term, you see those overuse injuries that can be really tough to avoid. I mean, you're not going to be able to not throw the ball, you know, if you're playing baseball. So what can we do to make you resilient? So hopefully you last a little longer, you make it through this season, then we can deal with it a little bit more on hands-on.
Yeah.
I don't follow a bunch of people, but my good friend Brad Forsyth, who we're big baseball fans, sent me this. And I don't know if you see this. I don't know where it comes from. It's on Instagram. But what it is it's called coaching.
That was the first one, idiot.
Wait a minute. Just watch this. This is coaching techniques in 2024 for catchers.
Let's go.
I've seen this. I've seen this.
So
that looks like I got in an argument with some guy out of Texas. That might be the guy I got in an argument.
But this brings up what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Are we spending so much time on this? I don't even know what kind of coaching you would call that. I know it's an exaggeration.
Yeah.
But this kid will pull a hamstring because he doesn't know how to sprint.
Uh-huh.
But is it so specialized now that is that kind of what we're talking about here? Is like, I know it's a joke.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what we're going into, right?
Yeah. So you make a really good point. So if you look at where that's done, it's done at an indoor facility. And indoor facilities in baseball specifically have gotten so much better in the last 25 years. So players from major leagues all the way through little league, they train at these places in the off season. We have it too. Our players go to them in the off season. Now, here's what I have. So, number one, if I go to a facility like that and I ask you to train me, you kind of have to find something wrong with me. So, great story. So, back when I was a volunteer coach at Sacramento State 12 years ago, I was learning to bowl and I got like pretty good at it and I actually won a bowling lesson. So, my first two shots, he said, let me see you throw some strike shots. So my first two strikes, perfect in the pocket. And then my third one, perfect in the pocket, but I did leave the 10 pin. And he's like, okay, I see something wrong here. So he starts like tweaking my shot. And I kind of got the bowling yips after this lesson because he was trying to change like my hand position on the ball. And he was trying to change my follow through when really I just left the 10 pin. So I think if you go to one of these facilities or today in baseball, there's so much money being funneled to specialists. And if I funnel a bunch of money to a specialist and he watches me and I'm like, and he says, everything looks fine, then you almost feel like you lost your money, right? So I think these facilities, and I think a lot of them do a phenomenal job, but I do think that they are actively looking for something wrong. It's almost like if I take my car to a mechanic, he will find something wrong with it.
So keep the money for lessons coming in.
Correct.
They got to generate revenue. Wow, that is so smart, coach.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. That's why they're doing this, is like, we got to find something to pick apart mm-hmm. to keep his mom and dad bringing him here. If we just tell him, hey, this kid's ready for Coach Jake's program, that facility's not going to make any revenue.
Yeah. And then so the other thing with that I think too is the facilities are very good at developing certain things, but at the end of the day, you have to be able as a pitcher to go get guys out, and you have to as a hitter be able to have a good team at bat. And so I said this to a player recently, was like, I think if like I went to a golf coach, I could get a pimped out good golf swing, But I still have to know how to hit out of the bunker. I have to know how to make shots specific to the hole. I have to go take my skill set into the wild and learn how to compete. And that's what I think is missing maybe from development in the game, because you go to a facility, it's perfect conditions. You're indoors. You know, it's like extra loud when you pop the catcher's mitt because you're indoors. Like, everything is just so nice. You're not having to get people out. You're not competing for a spot because you are paying the company. And so players leave there and they feel so good about their progress, feel so good about themselves, which is great. But there's another team that's trying to beat you and you have to learn how to beat them still. And I think maybe that's getting lost from the game right now.
So with that analogy that you just said of that kid leaving that facility feeling great, like, I'm ready, mixed with social media, mixed with everybody's got their own image now. Mm-hmm. That's got to be tough to coach if they're coming out with this mindset that, man, I learned how to swing up on the ball. I mean, when I was learning how to hit, it was hit the ball where it's pitched, create leverage, create backspin, hit it on the nails, line drive to all parts of the field.
Yeah.
And now it's like swing up, and if you ain't hitting it 30 feet over the fence, that's a weird mindset to me too. I mean, I walk in, I watch my nephew being trained. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Pump the brakes. I want to say that, but I'm not that guy. But I'm like, man, it's become a new approach to the game. But is it harder to coach when you lose a kid and he goes to these specialized development centers and they come back? Does it make it more difficult to get the messaging to them?
Yeah, I mean, it can be. And one thing I've really tried to push our staff on, and myself included, is like, you know, we're not competing with these facilities. We have to collaborate with them because they do some good things. But I think where you really solve it is in recruiting. You know, for me, just being in the game now, this is my 18th year as a coach. I want players that have experience in a winning program. That's important to me. So College of Southern Nevada is a great example. Like, the coach and I have a great relationship. We have Southern Nevada kids on our team. I know if I get a guy from CSN, like, winning is going to be important to him. Like, they're going to want to do these things. They're going to want to get better. They're going to want to hit the ball hard. They're going to throw hard, sure. But, like, at the end of the day, they want to win. So, for me, it's like, it's funny. The transfer portal is actually not a space I've really crushed, to be honest, because I don't know how much loyalty you get. Now, there are specialized cases for sure. We're going to trickle into that. But I like players that, like, they have a background of winning and they're committed to our program. I think that's the biggest workaround, is just, it comes down to selection. It's like building a company, right? Like, if you're going to hire an employee, what do people have to say about them in the industry that they've had to compete with? You know, it's people you trust too. So does it make it harder? It absolutely does. Because again, at a specialized facility too, all of the attention is on you. You're paying this person, you're paying this industry. All of the attention is on you, whether it's the medical staff, whether it's the coaches, it's all about you. But when you come to a team, you know, it's weird. I tell the guys, being a good teammate is not about you, but it's also only about you, right? Like, you've got to put your attention on the other people, but your decisions impact the team. So it's very tricky as a coach. But that, like I said, I'm talking in circles, but that's our workaround, is selection.
Rob, be thinking of your question while I ask this one. I want you to get into the NIL or the transfer portal now that he's went into. But coach, you just compared your team to a business, and I compare everything to a business, an entrepreneurial spirit, a CEO mentality, leading this country all the way down to a kindergarten teacher, right? Why do you choose to coach third base when you're the CEO? Meaning, are you a micromanager of a CEO to where you have to be in there being the boss man of calling the plays, the bunt sign, the steal sign, whatever it is? Shouldn't you be sitting up at your desk watching and making sure that that game is being played the way that the CEO lined it out and painted the picture for this team to do it, the strategy on the chalkboard or the whiteboard? Why do you choose to put a helmet on and go to third base when you're the CEO?
Great question. So this is my 18th year of coaching. It's actually the first year I've ever coached third base. I had no intentions of doing it. So I think anybody that's ever worked for me would say that I am almost the opposite extreme of a micromanager, maybe even too much of giving of autonomy and freedom. Here's why we did it. So are you familiar with PitchCom?
Little tiny bit.
Okay. So basically what PitchCom is it's a remote and you push a button and it sends a pre-recorded message into the ear of the player, right? So if it's a fastball, the pitcher has an earpiece, we push fastball, says fastball in his ear, right? And the same with our position players. If we push hit and run, it goes into their ear. Well, the NCAA, of all the things that they really, really care about, for some reason said that the third base coach cannot have the PitchCom remote. So actually, I have an offensive coordinator, and he calls the plays from the dugout because I'm not allowed to have it at third base. So he was going to be the third base coach all along, but he's also the offensive coordinator. He just couldn't take this remote. So we just felt like it made more sense for me to go over there so he could call the plays. Now, at the same time, speaking of opposite extremes as a CEO, one thing I've learned is that when a player has a bad at bat, you know, like nobody feels worse than them, and having to walk right by the head coach into the dugout, I think is difficult. So I almost felt like, you know what, if I go over there, I'm going to give these guys some healthy space from me. And I'm not like, I'm sure you're getting this vibe. I am not a screamer and a yeller. I'm not going to blow somebody up for having a bad at bat, but still I am the head coach and they've got to walk right by me when they strike out in a big situation. So I was like, well, if I go over there, direct traffic, just basically do what the offensive coordinator says, it's the best thing for the team. And I think as the CEO, that's always what you have to do. What's best for the team.
Wow,
that's even, awesome.
That's pretty cool, Coach.
That's awesome.
It's almost like you knew what questions I was going to ask. It's scripted.
I was going to say he's batting 1,000. I like it because I was there when Powers was there.
Okay,
and he was a hard guy for those kids.
Sure,
hard. And I look back because I'm have to think I'm a little more similar to you, but he would get on those kids, and even when they were batting, I'm like, dude. They cannot relax when you're on them like that. I'm like, they're only going to get worse. You know, I mean, he created some tough guys because to play for him would have been hard. Yeah. So, no, I think it's a great approach
that what you just described. But I also have a little bit of an issue with the part of a player not being able to manage that part of his psyche. If you're not a screamer and a yeller and you have a good rapport with your team, I would think that your guidance once you get in there, I know the offensive coordinator is going to be like, well, we didn't follow the plan or why'd you let that strike go by? But I would think with your mentality and your approach and your intelligence, because you're very well spoken, that you would have a special gift of right away sense of urgency if that head stays in the game and you don't go take your offensive mistake out onto the defensive field. That would be my only question to that strategy of there in the dugout, you're going to say, hey, grab your glove. Don't worry about it. We'll work on that approach this next week, or your next at bat, you're going to be fine. Whatever you're going to say to them as the leader. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure your offensive coordinator has the ability to say that,
sure.
But it's different coming from the CEO.
Yeah.
When I would have a bad at bat, I played in the days of,
hardcore.
Yeah.
You were going to walk by something that was not going to be very pleasing. But in today's world, my question is, do you have to be a softer coach? Because there's videos of Augie. I played against Augie at Cal State Fullerton. He goes to Texas. There's videos of him that would probably get him canceled today if they had come out the day that they were recorded. Mm-hmm. There's skits done on Comedy Central of football coaches that were recorded at halftime by an iPhone that got them fired.
Mm-hmm.
Is this created a softer coaching approach in today's world?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So, yeah, and it's funny because Coach Powers and I have a great relationship. I talk to him every week, and you know, and he'll even say, like, I don't know if I'd want to coach in today's game, you know.
It's a different game.
I know Dallimore.
Yeah, and Dallimore, I have a great relationship with Freddie, too. And, you know, both those guys say the same thing, and they were just such elite coaches. Mm-hmm. So, to answer your question, I don't know if as a whole – I would say it's a softer culture. I think it's different. As the leader, though, you definitely have to be more strategic with how you approach it. So it's kind of funny. Like, I give myself 3 or 4 blowups a year as the head coach, like where I'm going to really, really get into it.
Where are you at so far?
I'm at 3.
Okay.
So I'm at 3. Coach.
Yeah, I know. Now, this goes back to the fall. This goes back to the fall, though.
Okay.
But I think when you are a calmer leader, and I would consider myself a pretty calm leader, but then you go there, you get results immediately, and they know, like, you're not messing around. But you have to be careful with what you say. And I think a lot of this comes down to my approach typically is individual meetings. I'm a big fan of individual meetings. So if I see something from a player, you know, I'll give you a great example. You know, we have had in the past a good player that didn't run hard to first, but this was a player that played every day. And, you know, I would say to him, like, there are haves and have-nots on a baseball team. It's just the unfortunate reality. There are guys that play every day and there are guys that don't play much. And if one of the have-nots, right, the guys that aren't necessarily playing, see you dogging it to first base, that's my ass. That comes back on me. So I need you to help me out. So I think, like, spinning it like that, like, hey, you have the potential as the human here to better the situation by just giving us more effort. that's what I have found to be most effective is those individual meetings. But at the same time, because you talked about like not taking something out on the defense, I always remind the team, no matter the result of the game, like you have to flush it. Like yesterday, we won an extremely emotional game on a walk-off home run. And it was an incredible moment. But the most important thing we can do now as a team is flush it, because we have a game today. And like one thing I can tell you about Air Force is they're not going to give up. And they're not going to quit. They're not going to roll over. So has it created a softer culture? I think in some respects, yeah, probably. Has it changed coaching? Yeah. I mean, when I was a younger coach, I was much more animated, much harder. But at the same time, I think some of the changes have been healthy, and I'm sure some of them have been unhealthy, but it just is what it is.
I was just thinking, and again, when I mentioned those guys, it's nothing taken away from them because they're Hall of Famers in terms of coaching. But do you feel like you, in this day and age, have to be a better communicator? Because, you know, you can't just yell and scream and get emotional. So you almost have to just be, like you said, flip the switch on these guys and make them think about, hey, this, you know, when you do that, you know, you're representing all of us here.
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah.
So I think a lot of the coaches who do a really good job in that space are becoming really good at communicating and learning how to deal with each player differently.
Yeah. You know, and it's kind of funny because you talked about social media earlier, and I do think that one of the things that this generation has going against them, like I feel like it's unfair to them, is I think that they have had to like seek their confidence and their identity through social media, which is a terrible place to do it.
Approval.
Yeah,
they're constantly
seeking approval.
Life
right?
Isn't that happy, but
yeah. And so I think to your point about being a communicator with them, like if I bring you into the office and I maybe show you a video of like what you did, how that impacts the team, I think that gives them a sense of like true autonomy and true identity. And I think this generation really craves that because the autonomy and identity they have, I think it's like, it's synthetic.
Yeah.
And it's driven from, again, you talked about social media. So I think like education, like we are educating these guys on being baseball players, but like they have to leave the program with like life skills to go be a good man, like be good husbands, be good fathers, be good members of their community. And so like we put a premium on that. We meet before practice and there's always some type of lesson. Like one of our lessons in the fall was, how do you shake somebody's hand? Like what are the mechanics of shaking a hand?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like, and you've been there though, like, right. You shake somebody's hand and they like fingertip you and you're like, ugh. That was awful. But they have to leave the program with those skills. And I don't care if we win a national championship. If we're producing bad people, we're still failing as coaches. And I think this generation more than ever needs to be taught life skills.
Totally.
How does it affect that entire approach and ideology you just explained, Coach Jake, with me and Rob and I have been talking about NIL. You mentioned it briefly so far this morning. And we are, I know that you got to get to the field because you're playing Air Force. They do not lay down. What time do you need to be to the yard for a 2:05 start?
2:05. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't want to keep you.
No, you're good. You're good. In the spirit of being a CEO, I always think you're measured as a leader by how well does the ship sail when you're not there.
I love it.
We have plenty of guys there. So when we're done, we're done.
So I could sit in for you today and nobody would notice.
Yeah, we'd be fine.
Okay.
Good. Yeah.
With this whole ideology you're talking about learning how to shake hands, you don't hear that a lot when you're talking to coaches. That really doesn't come up. Now, I've heard some great talks. Remind me coach's name at Vandy.
Corbin.
Yeah, like great talks.
Yeah,
and
great
I talked
guy.
To Walker Buehler, a buddy of mine, playing for him.
Yeah.
Was just great. But one of the things that I've learned through, you talk about meetings. There is a such thing in business as too many meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Busy time.
Yep.
One's enough maybe for the week,
mm-hmm.
but everybody's like, man, we got to fill this hour with a meeting. We got to talk. In today's world of these athletes that are coming into the University of Nevada Reno baseball program, do you have to sit down with them a lot? Because mixed with social media, mixed with this identity that they've created for themselves, mixed with NIL and the potential to make money now as a college athlete, how do you struggle with that? Because I would think that going back to that word ego, or do you take their ego out of the game 100% at the very beginning of recruiting? Like, look, you might be coming here to this program, but you got to understand that it's team first and this entire identity, or do you want that identity with them? Do you want them to have that confidence? Or in a lot of cases, there's a lot of fake confidence that comes through social media in these potential NIL deals. Does it scare you that a player could be like, hey, almost like Dorn, the third baseman in the movie Major League, and he pisses on the contract, right? I'm not going to do Dean calisthenics, and the coach pisses on the contract, right? I'm not going to do calisthenics that I deem unnecessary. What do you think about that, Skipper? Like, how do you deal with that with players that have the ability to create their own identity and make money now?
Yeah, good. Okay, so I'll start with the question about meetings. Have you guys ever heard of a tool called Menti?
No.
Okay. A lot of our meetings are ran by Menti because I think that this generation doesn't want to be talked at. I think that they want to interact. So Menti, basically, I'll put a QR code on the locker room TV and they scan it with their phones and they interact with the meeting. So it'll ask them questions. It'll like survey them. And that'll drive a lot of our meetings because then I think that they have ownership in it. And I think that your entire organization should have a stake in what's going on. So we use Menti a lot for our meetings, and our meetings are never more than like 7 minutes. I hate long meetings. But, you know, in terms of, you know, we talked about ego, and I got this from Coach K. I think this is a great thing, is like, we've heard the term check your ego at the door. And he's like, I want you to bring your ego through the door, but I need those egos working together. Right. Like, I think that when players ooze confidence, they're dangerous players. And when players are like unsure of themselves, they're not very good players. Right. And so that's like the major leagues in a nutshell, is you've got to get 25 guys in a locker room to bring their egos through the door and get them to play as a team. So I think for your freshmen, I want them to have confidence, but they have to learn how to be a teammate. And it is so hard to play as a freshman at the Division I level. And sometimes their confidence can get shaken, you know, because all they've ever done is been the best player on their team. Mm-hmm. And now they're not playing and they're learning how to be a teammate. But eventually I want them to get to the point. Believe me, this is not the military, but it's almost the same concept, where it's like, I think early on the ego probably gets stripped a little bit because you're learning to play for something bigger than yourself. But once you get that, now I'm like, bring your ego through the door, play with confidence, but do it together. Because if I have 9 big egos that are working together, I think we have a chance to be really dangerous. I don't want players that have their tails between their legs. And like, I'm always like, especially to our infielders, I'm like, hey, bro, if you're going to throw a ball away, throw it into the parking lot. You know what I mean? Like, don't come up short because you're scared. Like, man, just let it eat. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Like, I'll have your back. But I want them to bring their egos through the door, but also have a selflessness where they can have 9 egos working together on the field.
I saw you taking a note on Menti. You're going to install this.
I'm going to check it. I'm going to check it out. Because I'm fully on board with, my wife has to do more. I'm like, you got to get out of there. And I don't get paid if I'm in a meeting. So I'm like, I'm not making money to sit here and, you know, let's get to the point. So, and I had an AD who was from Army. He put it down. It was like, boom, you got off topic. He's like, next topic. I mean, so he knew how to run a meeting.
Yeah, meetings can be cancerous.
Oh, yeah.
Meetings can be ugly. In business, they can be...
take you down.
Yeah. You know, what I learned about Menti was during COVID when I was with the Brewers, and I had a title with the Brewers that I had to essentially lead about 65 coaches. And in COVID, it's almost like you felt like your value was gained through meetings on Zoom. And, you know, just, you know, you got the people that have their cameras off, it's muted, nobody wants to interact. And so then that's where I was introduced to Menti, is like, if I put a QR code on this Zoom and they scanned it and they feel like, you know, they're interacting with the meeting and they can like write in questions, those types of things. I just think engagement goes up and you can actually get something done. But I got this from Craig Council, getting to work for him. Like, Craig meets with the big league team, I would say, I don't know, 3 or 4 times a year. He was not big on meetings. Like, there was an intro meeting. I wasn't with the big league team every day by any means, but like, I don't think he met with that team very often. But I think like those couple meetings you do have, you really establish like, hey, what are the core values of this? What are we trying to do? What are the goals? And then, like, you're all great. You're all talented. Go do your thing.
We're going to break here for a few commercials. I'm fired up. I appreciate y'all being here.
A coach has to do what is best for the team.
One thing I've learned is that when a player has a bad at bat, you know, like, nobody feels worse than them, and having to walk right by the head coach into the dugout, I think, is difficult. I'm not going to blow somebody up for having a bad at bat, but still, I am the head coach and they've got to walk right by me when they strike out in a big situation. So I was like, well, if I go over there, direct traffic, just basically do what the offensive coordinator says, it's the best thing for the team. And I think as the CEO, that's always what you have to do. What's best for the team?
Jack Daniels presents This Life Ain't For Everybody is powered by Bad Boy Mobile. mowers, mow with an attitude. Find their powerful line of tractors, mowers, and tools at badboycountry.com. Don't go anywhere. More Nevada baseball talk when we return.
Hey, everybody, you know we are a huge fan of Jack Daniel's, not just their product, but their mission, their culture, Lynchburg, Tennessee, the people. And we want to introduce you to the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. Join us at jackdaniels.com and learn about the Single Barrel Program, visiting Lynchburg, Tennessee, participating in a barrel tasting, a whiskey tasting, picking your favorite flavor, whether it's the burn in your mouth, whether it's the maple, whether it's the different combination of flavors that you are going to experience in each of the distinct bottles of Jack Daniel's Single Barrel. You're going to be able to choose the best one, your favorite one, and purchase that entire barrel. It all comes bottled in individual single barrel bottles. You get your own hanging name tag, brand tag, your logo on it. You can give them away as gifts. Go knock on the door of a landowner and say, thank you for letting me hunt your field. There's so many options with the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. We're proud to be part of it. We have introduced it to so many of our friends and family across the country, whether it was at a business, whether it was at a duck lodge, whether it was at a conservation event. It is truly an awesome program. Learn more about it at jackdaniels.com. The Single Barrel Program. We've been involved for the last 5 years. I'm looking at two of my barrels right now. We just got our 2023 barrel in the single barrel rye. Absolutely mesmerizing. My brother Clint's old fashions with it speak for themselves. It's the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. Check it out. Learn about it. I hope you decide to visit Lynchburg, Tennessee and get your own barrel. Thank you very much. We started American Almond Beef with the mentality to be different, to set ourselves apart, and that's the road that we're on. Our feedlots are clean. Our feed is different. Our approach to making sure that our cattle and steers are raised right. There is a story behind American Almond Beef. Northern California ranchers and farmers, the almonds, the commodity business, everything coming together to provide a feed that allows for this marbling, the flavor, the texture, the finish. American Almond Beef is where it's at. I'm telling you, get an order placed, try it for yourself, and you will not go back to regular store-bought beef. AmericanAlmondBeef.com. Thank you very much for the support. We can't wait for you to try it. We've had the provider mentality for a long time. Growing up and watching dad and mom cook wild game, whether it was an Italian lasagna or a spaghetti, I watched in awe and I couldn't wait to be old enough to do it. Then we got to travel and meet all of these different chefs at all these different lodges in Argentina and Uruguay or Paraguay or Arkansas or Missouri or Chef Mark Lindsay, who you hear on the podcast, This Life Ain't For Everybody, a lot up in Minnesota at Trapper's Landing, part of the Reed's family of brands. And I started to learn so many different unorthodox, out-of-the-box ways of preparing Mr. Billy Bogey's smothered deer steak at Prairie Wings Duck Club in Arkansas, or the duck empanadas at Duck Guides of Argentina. And they all became part of the provider cookbook, the provider mentality. At theproviderlife.com, our rubs, our original 10 in the ultimate pack, including the swine and the flaky, the spawn, the drop tine, the fowl, the crosshairs, the brit, the dragon, the sonora. Then we introduced the brand beef rub and the mother clucking chicken rub. And you can find recipes at theproviderlife.com. Check out the provider TV on the My Outdoor TV app, Mo TV, part of the Outdoor Sportsman's Group and the Outdoor Channel family of brands. We got more coming. We got so much more coming. Good luck out in the field. Good luck out on the rivers. I hope you get those wild turkey nuggets in that pickle juice right away and get ready to throw down with some different rubs on them. The provider lifestyle. We're so honored to live it. Thank you, Lord, for letting us be outdoorsmen, hunter, gatherers, conservationists, and providers. Again, theproviderlife.com. Thank you for visiting. We've talked about the Western lifestyle so much here when it comes to rodeo, when it comes to quarter horses, when it comes to ranching, when it comes to farming, conservation, hunting, fishing, outdoors, family, friends, memories, culture, reminiscing, the stories, the campfires. We love it all. We've brought you American Almond Beef. We've brought you Buck and Bull, and now we bring you Cowboy Choice. Are you a horse lover? Are you into rodeo? Are you into trail riding? Are you into ranching? Are you into farming? Horses are America. We love horses. We love everything about them. And Cowboy Choice is the ultimate blend of food to keep your horses healthy, strong, their energy levels up, and most importantly, keeping them happy through their entire time on earth. Again, horses are part of our family. They're part of our everyday life. and we live it every day at Cowboy Choice. So when you're in your retailer, ask them, do you carry Cowboy Choice? Because a lot of them are starting to. It will be the number one horse feed on the market in the next 2 years. Mark my words, it's Cowboy Choice. It's the best horse feed we have ever seen results out of. We tested it for over 18 months before we went to market with it. The effects that it's had on horses, the performance that we've seen out of horses that are eating the Cowboy Choice on a daily basis are head and shoulders above anything we've ever witnessed or experienced. Cowboy Choice, the official horse feed of the Fowl Life podcast. You can find it at your nearest feed store, pet store, ranching store. Cowboy Choice, thank you all so much for trying it. We know you're going to make the transition. Thank you all so much for supporting Cowboy Choice horse feeds.
You're listening to Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody with Chad Belding. Part two of a special episode with Jake McKinley, head coach of the University of Nevada baseball program, as well as Rob Knatzer from Sierra Strength and Speed. And it's powered by Bad Boy Mowers. Power, performance, attitude.
This mentality of playing this much baseball, doesn't that have a chance of burning a kid out to where he never wants to see another pitch?
100%. I just think the culture of travel ball, the culture of showcases, I think is really dangerous too. Prioritize high school baseball over travel baseball. I really believe that.
Too much caution could be the enemy when it comes to athlete injuries.
I think prevention is also really important. And I think as an industry, we have become so cautious when we're training athletes that I think sometimes athletes are undertrained, and that's why they get hurt in games.
Thanks to Lear Toppers, Jack Links, Oakley Sunglasses, and Corning Ford for supporting This Life Ain't For Everybody. Here's Chad, Rob, and Coach Jake.
Speaking of the Brewers, how does that happen, and did you get to meet Bob Uecker?
So I got to meet Uke a few times. He always came to spring training.
So jealous. Harry Doyle.
Yeah.
Did he have the pause button? Have you ever heard the stories of the pause button?
No.
Artie Lang, the comedian that worked on the Howard Stern Show, tells a story that he's at spring training in Scottsdale, and the Brewers are, I think they're playing the Padres, and, you know, if I got to beep this part out, I don't, that's fine, but Uecker had a cough button. Like, if I just coughed, I would hit a button and it would pause the audio to where the listening audience doesn't hear it. And they're sitting in there and he's interviewing Artie Lang, and this hot blonde gets up and is walking through the thing, and he goes, God, look at the, you know what's on that hose hound or something like that. And then he goes, and two strikes later, and he goes right back into the deal and then does it again. And I'm like, I wonder if he really had a cough button, because that is so Uecker out of the Harry Doyle days. You know, that's just anyway, that's a little subway, but talk to me about Uecker and the Brewers.
Yeah, so he came to every spring training, and it was like the mayor of the team was there. I mean, that's what I would compare it to. And the first time I ever saw Uecker, I was starstruck. I was in the big league meeting in 2019, and Craig was talking about the team and like what are the things that are important to accomplish in spring training. And then like Uecker just like actually walked in mid meeting, and he's like, guys, look who it is, like one of the most famous Brewers ever. And everybody like gives him an applause, and the bench coach Pat Murphy, who's now the manager, gave Uke a hug. And the first thing I ever heard Uke say when Murphy gave him a hug was, be careful, you're gonna pop my colostomy bag. It's the first thing he ever said. But then
was he being serious?
I have no idea. Maybe yes, God, maybe no.
Who gives a shit? Nobody's listening anyway.
Yeah, so it was awesome. But then he I got to know him a little bit personally at spring training every year, and you would think he's 25 years old. You know,
he's got to be close to 90. Huh?
I think he is 90. Yeah, I mean, he would show up.
Does he still get on the play-by-play or the?
Oh,
color?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Does he really?
Oh yeah.
I didn't know that.
I have a relationship with Travel Wisconsin, the tourism bureau there.
Okay.
And I'm begging them to get him on this show. Like, I know it's far fetched.
Sure.
But to just to talk to him one time would be a just a bucket list for me.
Oh,
I'm a huge fan. All the way back to the Miller Lite commercials.
Yeah.
And then I was going to ask you at the end of this, I mean, I know you're an intelligent dude. You're probably going to say that Major League is by far the best baseball movie ever made.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't think that. A lot of people say Field of Dreams or Bull Durham, but his part in that movie, I'm talking just legendary genius. Like, it had to have all been off the cuff, ad-lib, like Bill Murray used to do in Caddyshack with Chevy Chase. Genius that movie.
Oh, genius. Loved him. And I remember like just watching Major League. I used to watch it as a kid all the time, like multiple times throughout the summer. And I was like starstruck when I saw him. I was like, oh my God. I was like, that's the guy. That's the guy from Major League.
That's how I would be.
Yeah.
That's how I'd be. I'd be like, oh my God, Mr. Uecker. He'd be like, knock it off, dude.
Yeah. And the first time I talked to him, I was like, you know, it's almost like a first date. Like, what do you say here? You know, so you like just say some like BS small talk, you know, like, how's Appleton, Wisconsin? Because that's where we ran our
all-site. Yeah, because you can't say, tried the corner and Miss Vaughn has just yeah, walked exactly. the bases low. He'd be like, dude, I've heard it. I've heard it.
Exactly. I've heard it. Exactly.
But that movie, let's talk about that for a second, Coach. You said you watched it a lot of times. It was so real for me to watch that and the sounds of that movie. Like, if you go back and I could listen to that movie and laugh my, you know, what's off. Mm-hmm. Not even watching it. I've done it. You play it in an excursion, driving to spring training, the TVs are in the back, I'm sitting in the front seat, I can't even see it, and I'm just rolling and just reliving it. But that movie transcended with me because it was a bunch of different personalities. And of course, it's Hollywood.
Yeah.
But to see Pete Vukovich as the Yankees first baseman and the stuff that he would say to Wesley Snipes and the stuff that Todd Behringer would say to Rene Russo about, did you ever read Moby Dick, cover to cover, babe? And they had these, it was all baseball approach the entire movie. Like, they got chili dogs over there. I mean, Charlie Sheen's Vaughn was genius in this movie. But it goes back to what you're dealing with as a coach of all these different egos and personalities that came together because this owner was trying to dismantle this team.
Yep.
And they're like, wait a minute. It's almost like the Reno community is like, wait a minute. I don't care if the UNR baseball team is dismantled. No, wait. We're going to bring this community back together. And all of a sudden, Indians baseball was back in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And the place was, no, it's too high. Too. Who gives a shit? It's gone. It was like the best movie of all time because it brought that mentality of like, dude, these people are playing together.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's how it went to me. Like, I didn't look at it as just like, as like a slapstick comedy. It was real to me that these guys came together and brought that city back together for Cleveland baseball.
I couldn't agree more. And it's funny. You think of the manager, Lou, you know, who's like, he's got tires, he's doing tires, and he's like, oh, I'll get back to you about managing.
I got a guy on the white wall.
Yeah, exactly. And you like Willie Mays Hayes, Dorn, like those guys, like the egos are so big. They're not being good teammates early and he gets it out of them. It's exactly like what 100%. We do. It's exactly like what we do.
That's what I always got out of that is like, hey, bartender, Joe Boo needs a refill. Like, they were saying stuff on that movie that was like, these guys are never going to like each other, or Barbasol, Ben Gay. It's like, genius movie. The way that it came together at the end, people are probably going to go, Belding, you're off your rocker. That was just a slapstick comedy. No, it was not, dude.
Yeah.
Bob Uecker would not allow that to be a slapstick comedy. That was a real baseball movie.
Yeah.
It was far-fetched in some instances. Like, what league you been playing in? California Penal. We better teach this kid some control before he kills somebody. Nice fastball. Sounded like it. Like, that. It was so well put together that it kept you engaged in a comedy.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, I was like, I want to play for that freaking team.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
the
Savannah Bananas are because of those Cleveland Indians in the 1989 movie, Major League. Can you believe it's been out since 1989?
That's so crazy.
I was 13.
Wow.
Man, I'm aging myself. But again, I don't want it to go away. Like, I don't want that to end our podcast that Belding thinks that it's like an award-winning drama of baseball. It was a genius movie.
Yeah, it kind of is. And you know what I think the message of it is, too, is like, when you look at championships and you look at championship players, championship teams, like, they're always revered in such glory. But I've been fortunate to have like won some championships too. And the one thing that I know for sure is when you win a championship, there's turbulence along the way. There's turbulence along the way for every team.
And every marriage and every relationship and everything in life.
Yes.
It's nothing is what social media paints it to be. So these players need to understand, it ain't all about the roses.
No. And that's the thing in recruiting is you present your program, honestly, but it's always, you're going to like put it in a very high light. But look, like, you know, we're in the thick of it right now. You know, we got a chance to do something great, but like, it's also been bumpy. You know, we lost six in a row a few weeks ago. We have academic struggles here and there. There are off the field issues. Every single player has a story. Every single player has some type of baggage with family. But when you can get that group to come together and play as a team, then you have a chance to do it. And you play for some type of glory like that. But man, like, everybody looks at the end result and be like, oh, it must have been so amazing. Like, it's amazing that we got through it together, but the path is not this like smooth road. You know, again, it's Mario Kart. There's banana peels, there's shells. You got to learn how to like navigate that stuff.
I love it. I mean, I'm thinking, I don't know how long you have for real. I could talk baseball with you and Rob. Like, I'm serious. Like, I will put Major League on here. We'll watch it for 2 hours.
Well, so without getting into the NIL, Because that might be
that's a whole
6-hour conversation. Yeah. And really, Chad and I were talking. I don't even know where to start. It's crazy. You're a young coach. I like what you say. What are your main things? What would you give a young coach who's coming up and he wants to, hey, what do I need to do to move forward or progress? What are your main keys for getting into coaching, being a good coach?
For sure. I would say the same thing that like I was taught by, there's a guy named Buford Sanders. He's the head coach at Campbellsville University in Kentucky, and that's where I was a GA. That's where I really truly got started. But, you know, I didn't have like a great coaching or a great background to get into coaching. I played NAIA baseball. I played independent baseball. And then my first ever boss, a guy named Chris Lewis, he's the head coach at a school out in Kentucky as well. But, you know, like I think the most important thing that you can do as a young coach is care about the people around you. I know that that's not like groundbreaking information, but listen, like if I got really good at reading a TrackMan plot, if I got really good at reading motion capture data, but the player like doesn't know that I have their best interests and I care about them, or I'm not using them to advance my career, like it doesn't even matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, is there a level of competence that you have to achieve as a coach? Absolutely. Like I've got to be able to talk to a player and that player has to trust that I have an idea of what I'm talking about. But the most important thing you can do is develop like people skills and like invest time with players. And when I was up in the big leagues in 2021, I think Pat Murphy is like, I think he's the best coach I've ever met. I mean, he's certainly up there, and that's obviously high praise. I've met some good ones, but
wow, that's
awesome
to hear.
I think he's, I've got him maybe as the best coach I've ever met. But you know what he would do? You know, after the games, I would see him in the kitchen, you know, sitting at the table with Christian Yelich or, you know, Willie Adames, and he just like, just chats with them. You know what I mean? Because these, again, these are people. These are people with things going on away from the field. These are people that are dealing with struggles. These are people that are dealing with great things too. But getting to know the player is something I thought Murph was just and is an absolute master at, because I think once that person knows like, hey, this dude has my best interest, this dude wants to see me be successful, then I think you've gotten through the barrier to give them information that might help them as a baseball player. But if some stranger went up to this player and was like, hey, you know, you're flying open, the player would be like, who the hell are you?
Right.
Right. So that's the number one advice I'd have for a young coach is like, get to know the people. Make sure they know you care, and you need to authentically care. And then secondarily, man, like, you know, not to get too much into the weeds, but I didn't get my first paycheck in baseball till I was 29. I volunteered for 8 years as a coach.
Yeah.
So I never got into this profession to get rich. I never got into this profession, I guess, for like my own advancement. I got into it because I really like coaching. I like people.
You loved it.
Yeah, I loved it. So you got to make sure you love it. And I think you got to be willing to not make money early. I mean, I hate to say it, but like, and not to like compare it to like my own journey, but like sometimes I'll hear a 25-year-old be like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to take that, you know, salary and benefits. I'm like, bro, I lived in my office illegally at Menlo College when I was the head coach
you
there.
You could have easily started a fans only page.
I could have.
You could have made income. You
lost opportunities, man. Lost opportunities.
Coach, I got to ask you along the same lines of what you're talking about that Rob just asked. I love this question right here is, what would you tell a parent right now that wants to have a D1 baseball player? Specialize? Don't play basketball. Don't play football. Don't ever think about putting skates on to play hockey. Stay off that motorcycle, Jeff Kent. That was a little inside joke. Remember that. But what would you tell a parent? Stay out of their business. Relax. Don't walk so – tread lightly with it. This mentality of playing this much baseball, doesn't that have a chance of burning a kid out to where he never wants to see another pitch?
100%. And it's funny you say that. So that player I was talking to you about from Michigan is an elite – outside linebacker at his high school too. And we talked on the phone the other night after our game on Tuesday, and he had asked me like, do you think I should play football? And I said, hey, I'm going to support you with whatever you do, but if you play football, I want you to like light some dudes up. Like play it, man. Like go for it. Because I agree, like when you get to college, especially at the Division I level, it's almost like a job, right? Sure. Like you've got like your whole day is surrounded with baseball and school. And so when you're a high school kid, man, just enjoy being a high school kid. So if you're a good basketball player, go play basketball. There's a local kid. I don't know if I'm allowed to say his name, but there's a local kid here in Reno, and I would say he's the best 2024 player in the class, and he's coming to Nevada next year, but we signed him early. He played football, and he tore his ACL. Like, it happens. Like, I'm not going to take a scholarship. I'm very committed to this kid. He's a great kid, great family. He's going to rehab it and get better. But, like, we all know you can get hurt doing anything. I get hurt walking down the street. So I just think, like, the culture of travel ball, the culture of showcases, I think is really dangerous too, right? Like, you go to a showcase and all it's about is showcasing my tools for college coaches. I like to watch games more because I want to see how these kids interact with their teams, how they interact with, like, bad calls from umpires. But baseball, especially from, like, the ages of, like, 8 to 17, it's just becoming so individualistic. So, like, for young kids, like, man, go play Little League. Go play high school baseball. Mm-hmm. Prioritize high school baseball over travel baseball. I really believe that.
But, Coach, I got to interrupt you for 1 second. I've heard in the last 10 days of programs that if you don't play summer ball and that coach's summer ball travel ball team, that your chances of making the junior varsity or varsity team at your high school are diminished almost automatically. Is this true?
I'm assuming that's probably true.
That's sad.
Yeah.
You can't go on summer vacation to Orlando anymore.
Yeah.
Which I think because you won't make your high school team.
Let me throw this out really quick.
You think, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you think that's true?
I do, and I think back, like,
it is.
When I was...
What if you're a stud?
Right.
What if you're man?
That's what I was going to hit on. So Chad knows I have triplet boys.
Okay.
Two of them compete just in everything. One was a little bit better than the other. And that rumor started to fly for basketball. And I was like, if you are good enough, they're not going to not play you.
Correct.
This winter. I'm like, if you got shit to do on that, because a couple of them were two sport athletes. I'm like, if you got something to do this summer, that's your commitment for summer. You'll be there ready to go when basketball time is. You make yourself so good that they can't not play you. I mean, some of that stuff drives me nuts, Chad, but that stuff is being said, being passed down. It's unfortunate if a coach is going that way.
Yeah.
I just heard two kids. It's sad.
It's too bad because, again, like, this is a game. Like, we're trying to hit a ball with a stick, essentially. I'll give you a great example. Like, on our team, we have a kid named Jeff Bowser. And Jeff's one of my favorite players I've ever coached in my entire career. He is just the best teammate ever. And he approached me because his sister's wedding is during our next Air Force series. And he's supposed to be the best man. And he's like, what do you think? I'm like, are you kidding me? You're going to the wedding. Like, I won't allow you to come to our game if you're going to have the chance to be the best man in your sister's wedding. Like, come on, dude.
Who gets married during baseball
season? I know. Yeah, I said, hey, bad planning by the family.
That's the first problem here.
Right? But
that's like my buddies. I'm like, hey, we're going to Canada in October to hunt ducks. And they're like, I'm in a wedding. I'm like, he'll have another one. Nobody gets married. Nobody gets married. That's total joke. That's called comic relief. Uh-huh. It's a Shakespearean thing. Laugh. Look it up.
Yeah, but I just think
that's good that you let him go, though.
Yeah,
because that's
for sure.
Once in a lifetime.
It's once in a lifetime, man. And
to
like
be best man.
And so are the family vacations you're talking about. It's just but I do think like money and revenue drives that narrative. Like, the travel ball team functions because of money. And I'm not trying to like poo-poo travel ball, but revenue drives it. And, therefore, if you're not there and you can't win the plastic trophy that they give away at the end of the tournament, you're like a bad person. Like, no, bro, like go on your vacation, like be a family member.
I'm so glad you said this, Coach, because I've been battling this internally for the last 2 weeks because I had this – every year I take my daughter in July to a different beach in either the Gulf Shores or she loves the beach. And she also loves traveling around the SEC schools. And one of her dreams is to play Division I volleyball someday. Mm-hmm. Well, she's in a volleyball program here in Reno. They're going to know which one it is when they hear this. There's only one. But then I get this email that says that summer training is all of July, except 4th of July weekend. And I'm like, fuck.
Mm.
So I went to my ex-wife and I said, what do you think? And she comes out and straight up goes, she's going on vacation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you think the coaches are going to be pissed at her? Do you think that they're going to not let her make the team next year? My whole thought went to, I might be detrimental to my daughter's career if she's not going to make the club next year because she's not there for all 25 days of July training. Mm-hmm. And she's 13.
Jeez.
And I'm sitting here, a parent going, oh my gosh, my 13-year-old daughter can't even go on vacation with me now because she's in such a specialized program. It might not be the case. I tend to overthink things sometimes, probably why I'm not a coach. But the first thing that went to my mind is, I got to cancel the vacation. I text my girlfriend. I said, we got to cancel the vacation. We got volleyball. And she's like, what?
Yeah.
Volleyball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the mentality of these parents is like, right, we can't go live our lives anymore because sports. And one thing that COVID may have done well, because I didn't agree with a lot of COVID, I still don't. But one thing that it might have done is got us in our backyards barbecuing more. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I think that it did is that it taught parents that they don't need to be on the gas all the time, from ballet to soccer to football to baseball to boom, boom, boom. I mean, because our lives were so regimented with making sure our kids got to all these places. Well, COVID comes. And you're like, oh my gosh, life still exists if I'm not in my minivan running nine kids to practice this all day. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like, you have a lot of kids, Rob. Yep. You had to run a lot of people.
There were a lot of practices.
I think that my mind went straight to, I got to cancel vacation because I automatically thought my daughter would get cut if she did not attend summer drills.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
And she's 13.
I know. That is crazy.
That's what sports have become.
Yeah.
But to your point, I think, like, if you're a stud, they'll look past that.
Well, she's a stud, Rob.
There you go.
She's a stud. Say it on the radio.
Yeah.
But it is hard because I had one who was more borderline. And I'm like, you're going to. But, you know, to me, as a parent, as a coach, you go, okay, those things have to come up, right? We all have lives, families. There could be a big family reunion. You can't take that away from a kid. Those things are going to come up. And so it's like, okay, how do we adapt? What can we do in this period of time to make sure you're not falling off the, you know, you're not losing your game?
Yeah.
You know, we can do some stuff. Or as a coach, you can go, hey, I'm fine with that. Just work on your skills. Make sure you're, you know, when you come back in, you're ready to go. You're not, you know, it doesn't take you 2 weeks to get back on routine.
I'm gonna say a story real quick about coach just talked about. I'm going to do it in a nutshell about communication. I believe that it is a CEO's mentality to communicate with his team to get the ship headed in the right direction, but you do not need to have a micromanagement system, and you got to let them be themselves and have individuality and have other parts of their lives that are just as important as that job, okay? It's very easy to get tied into, this is it, because you're the entrepreneur, you're the CEO, this is your baby, this is your passion, but you got to understand that not everybody's wired like you, so you have to be able to manage the situation. I think that managing the situation goes right back to what you just said about counsel and Murphy and your style of communication and transparency. And here's why. There's been situations to where I've seen my nephew in college baseball. I've seen other kids, like my friend that I'm not going to say his name, but his son just quit his high school baseball team because he did not jive with the coach. I asked him, why don't you jive with the coach? He says, he never says anything. I'm a catcher, but he says I'm going to be a backup third baseman, but he doesn't tell me why. Mm. I said, he doesn't communicate with you? Mm. He goes, no, he doesn't say anything. I go, well, that's not being a coach. Mm. Took him to a Giants game. We all know that I'm friends with Will Clark. I'm not name dropping here. Mm-hmm. Will meets this kid, and I have video of Will giving him a hitting lesson at a hotel restaurant. Mm. And Will is taking time out of his night to sit this kid down and show him leverage and getting your hip start and getting, you know, all the timing mechanisms of a swing. Will gave him his cell phone number. This kid's 15 years old.
Wow.
He says, you call me anytime you need advice or friendship or anything you need. Mm-hmm. This is Will Clark. He's a Giants Hall of Famer, in case you didn't know.
Yeah.
His jersey's on the wall at Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the greatest.
Right.
My point is why not communicate and be upfront with these kids? Like, you don't need to play 100 games a year.
Yeah.
You're going to have a chance to play. Don't leave it up in the air of, like, these kids aren't mature enough to have guessing games played on them and manipulation and kind of like this condescending attitude of like, hey, man, I know all the answers. I'm not going to give them to you.
Mm-hmm.
Be open.
Yeah.
It brought up the whole thing about communication. And if the kid is not good enough for your program, then that's one thing. Then get him out of there, or her.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's made the team and she's made the team, then she deserves all the respect of the studs on the team.
Totally.
And if you are a stud on the team, you deserve to play if you're one of the best, even if you don't make all 162 games of travel ball.
Right.
Is this making sense of what I'm getting at? Will Clark took time to talk to this kid when his coach wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's BS to me.
Yeah.
That's a crazy mentality to me, that a coach would be like, and this kid's a stud. There's got to be something personal going on. This kid might not be the best baseball player, but now he's going to the UNR boxing team. He's not giving up. He's going to fight for. He's going to fight now.
Okay.
He's going to be a boxer. I just want communication. If you're the manager, communicate with these kids.
I was just going to say, coaching is teaching, right? I mean, and these are young kids, whether they're at the college level or the high school level. Our job is to try and give them the information and the tools so they can start to figure it out and put it together for themselves so they can advance and and get better, whether it's in athletics or just life. You know,
Coach Dalmore brought me into the office. You're the worst recruiting. He told me in that team meeting that day down the first baseline, you're the worst recruiting mistake I ever made, Billy. And I said, holy shit, that's the meanest thing that you could ever say to a kid. And it's the best thing that was ever said to me in my entire journey in life, because he sent me to a JUCO. I'm top 10 in the nation in hitting. I received 10 offers and scholarships the year after. I got to go play ball and play every inning, where I could have been there and been like 3 years at UNLV and never sniffed the wood, never got the bat in my hand. And he was honest with me, said, you're gone. You're out of here. You're not good enough for this program. And I'm like, well, you're the one that signed me.
Yeah.
Right. But he was up front.
Yep.
And now to this day, he sits in that chair right there. And I've seen that man at 78 years old shed tears about his kids that he coached and how much they meant to him and how much that that his life meant to him.
Yeah.
And his son's baseball career at Stanford, and his son just lost his wife at 39 years old.
Horrible.
I mean, horrible, right?
Horrible.
Like, he's a human being. And I got to know him as a human being because he wasn't afraid to tell me, you're not ready.
Yeah.
Get out. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big deal. So that's kind of my story in baseball, as now I get to hunt with major leaguers, and all I ever wanted to do was be one.
Right.
But Fred Dalmore's mentality with me and teaching me how to be a man led me to the ability to build something else and not give up on life just because I wasn't as good as Gus Kennedy in center field for the UNLV Hustlin' Rebels in 1993. That's kind of cool that he did that for me. But he didn't have to say I was the worst recruit that he ever made.
Yeah, and that's I do think in like any leadership role or CEO role, like, hey, man, when you deliver bad information that you know is going to hurt somebody, it sucks. It really sucks. Like, I've had to cut players before, and I hate it. I hate doing it. But if the kid really loves the game, they will find a situation that's better for them. And there were some players that we moved away from last year that were great kids, and they're playing every day at another school. You know what I mean? So, like, to your point earlier, it's like, if you deliver bad message honestly to a player, it can be the best thing you ever do for them. In the moment, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Don't not say something.
Right.
Don't say it.
Yeah, silence is a bad deal.
Silence sucks in anything in life.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend's, what's up with the silent treatment? It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You don't, you automatically go to the worst. I suck. He doesn't like me.
Right.
He's against me. Somebody's his son must play for the team. There's politics going on. All these stuff start going through your head, and it's not fair.
No, you're right.
Because you're not old enough or mature enough to process that yet. I was down in spring training last week, and the catcher for the Padres is 17 years old.
Yeah.
He's born in America. They sent him to the Dominican to get citizenship. You know who I'm talking about, Ethan Salas?
Yep.
Gets citizenship in the Dominican so he doesn't have to get a high school degree to get drafted. He gets drafted at signed at 15.
Yeah.
Now he was in double A as a 16-year-older last year.
Crazy.
That is nuts.
But what if these kids are so young at every level, we automatically assume. And the thing that I'm taking out of today's conversation, Reno, the community, what we have here that's so special is that we do have something special in UNR baseball here. We're very lucky to have it. To go watch, for me to go back and be able to watch those kids, and to know that 6,600 kids reached out to Coach Jake to become part of the UNR baseball team, and 41 are in that dugout to start that day, and 9 are on that field, and a couple in the bullpen. That's a huge achievement in life. And you better use that in life of saying, you know what? I was dang blessed to get to play, and I know I was. For me to get to go to the next level after high school with the high school program that I came out of, I'm almost like, wow, I must have been an unbelievable salesman to get myself in that position. I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you. Like that.
Some things haven't changed.
I'm so blessed.
Yeah.
And these kids are so blessed to have a coach like you, a coaching staff like you, the administration and Mr. Sandoval and the president and the AD and everybody from the top to bottom that's making this happen. And, dude, you drive by this freaking campus now and you're like, holy geez.
That is
nice. It's like Harvard.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's amazing and incredible. Beautiful. And they just keep going.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know all the politics of college, but I do know that if you're a baseball player at UNR, Coach, they're blessed to have you. We appreciate you being on the show. But today, you're playing Air Force. What's your record right now?
We are 7-3 in conference play. which is good for currently first place. But an overall 12-11. So as of right now, hey, today, you know, it's funny. They have projection systems that in the projection systems predict us to go 2-28 in conference. So to be 7-3, I take moments to appreciate it, but also know that we have a long ways to go.
But you're the right man to get them there.
I appreciate
that. And I love that you said you're dedicated long term here.
Yes.
Rob, do you have any closing words?
Good luck. Go kick some Air Force ass.
Maybe we talk Coach Jake into coming in and talking to the baseball guys at Triple S someday.
Anytime. Whatever you guys need.
They would love to hear that.
Yeah.
I think it's a great message. And I'm not kissing your ass. I like you as a person, but you're educated, you're well spoken, and you're smart. And I like that part about it. And your answers today, I thought I was going to stump you on a couple of them, but you're like, you got your shit together. And that just shows you what it takes to be a D1 baseball coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Coach Powers, if you're listening, I remember me and Ryan Walters in the weight room, bench pressing on leg day and maxing out. We apologize for being hellions, Coach. We apologize for the things we caused you, CP. I see CP once in a while. I love Coach Powers. Coach Dalmore, we love you. Brian Dalmore, our prayers are still with you. We hope everything's going well with you and the kids. This has been another episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody podcast with Rob from Triple S, Coach Jake McKinley from the University of Nevada Reno baseball program. Thank you all for listening to another episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody.
Coach Jake wants to develop great baseball athletes and even better men.
We are educating these guys on being baseball players, but like they have to leave the program with like life skills to go be a good man, be good husbands, be good fathers, be good members of their community. We put a premium on that. I think this generation more than ever needs to be taught life skills.
Bad Boy Mowers, Nashville Palace, Traeger Grills, and American Almond Beef bring you this special two-part episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody with Chad Belding. Thanks for listening. Chad, Coach Jake, and Rob will return in a moment.
What's going on, everybody? Chad Belding coming at you. The Foul Life Podcast is proudly presented by the one and only Bad Boy Mowers. Out of the great state of Arkansas, their zero-turn design and capability is zero to none. I've had these mowers everywhere from California to Georgia, from North Dakota to South Texas. We've put them in situations where they completely perform day in and day out with their power, the sharpness of the blades. Every single bit of that zero-turn capability gives you the advantage, gives you the confidence to get the job done. And now they have added tractors. Our tractors are doing projects for us on a daily basis. All of our duck properties, all of our different dwellings where we live, where we make our livings, we depend on the Bad Boy tractor to get the job done as well. And now you can depend on the Bad Boy Power in their new E-Series of hand tools. The blower, the trimmer, pull saw, the chainsaw, the backpack blower. We use these blowers in our goose and duck decoy trailers throughout the season, all over the country, blowing out debris, branches, mud, leaves, making sure that we are working in a well-manicured, clean environment is our goal, and that's why we have partnered and depend on Everything Bad Boy. Again, out of the state of Arkansas, their mowers are American-made. We depend on them. I hope you do, too. Next time you're in the market for anything that Bad Boy offers, I promise you, you can depend on them. Bad Boy Mowers, the presenting sponsor of Benelli's The Foul Life. It's rodeo season. I love the PRCA, I love the PBR, I love the Western cowboy lifestyle, farming, ranching, working cattle, mending fences, Chris Ledoux, songs about rodeo, songs about the cowboy life. I enjoy it. Sometimes I wish I would have been a cowboy. I was a country boy. But I had asthma, I was allergic to horses, but I'm envious of the cowboy lifestyle. Living it every day, and that's exactly what Resist All does. From supporting farming, ranching, rodeo, conservation, outdoors, making products right here in America to make sure that the cowboy nation, the cowboy culture, the Western lifestyle is always taken care of. Living it every day. You can find Resist All in every rodeo arena, in every feed store. If you're going in to buy chicken feeds, you're going to see a Resist All logo. Their family of brands with Cactus Saddlery, Cactus Ropes, it's second to none. Resist All cowboy hats. It's what we believe in. We wear them. We don't leave home without them. We have them to protect us from the elements. We scout ducks and geese in them. We hunt ducks and geese in them. We barbecue in them. We butcher in them. We process in them. We love the culture of Resist All, and we truly live it every single day in everything that we do. The respect that we have for the animals is the same exact respect that cowboys and cowgirls have for bucking bulls, bucking horses, the steer, the calves, you name it. The respect and lives that these animals are getting to live in the rodeo culture is exactly what we support. We're all about the ethics, and so is ResistAll. Thank you, ResistAll, for being the official cowboy hat of the Foul Life Podcast and the Foul Life TV. Being in the backyard at camp, being with friends and family, one thing that the pandemic did is it got us back in our backyards. It got us staying home more. And man, we just started doing so many cookouts, so much grilling. And we've been partnered with Traeger Grills for the last decade. And I don't know if you can be more innovative than what this brand has done, from the new Timberline XL and the new Flat Rock, the Ironwood 885, all of their pellets, their rubs, their sauces, their glazes, their smash burger kit, you name it. Traeger Grills is awesome. And we use them a ton. I'm sure you've seen it on the Foul Life. You've seen it in our social media. Get creative. Be innovative. Think outside of the box. Wild game, domestic, vegetables, desserts, pizzas. You can do it all on a Traeger grill. And like I mentioned, that Timberline XL with that conduction plate, I'm talking high heat, reverse sear steaks, anything you want to put on there gets it done in a hurry. After you put a little smoke on them on the grill, transfers right over. So easy. Everything is simplified. You can download the Traeger Grills app. You can find recipes. You can work with pros like Matt Pittman at Meat Church and Chad Ward at Whiskey Bent Barbecue and so many others from across the country to master these recipes. It's simple, and that's what Traeger is all about. They did not want your backyard experience to be complex. So when you're thinking of fun and good food and flavor recipes, thinking outside the box, think no further than Traeger Grills. I can't wait to get back in my Traeger grill. Just cook up something delicious. Thank y'all very much. Have you heard of the fun button? FlaskCap has reinvented the way we use tumbler cups. Everybody's got a tumbler cup. Come on, let's admit it. This tumbler cup is different. The Matic lid is different. The 6, the 9. Nobody wants glass in their boat. Nobody wants glass anywhere because of what can go wrong. If you go into your buddy's boat and glass breaks, that's a no-no. So you got your mixers in the cooler. You might have a 2-liter of Coca-Cola, Classic, Coke Zero. You might have some club soda in a plastic bottle or a can. Stuff that doesn't break and get glass that's nasty and will cut your feet up like no tomorrow. The flask cap allows you to store your spirits, your Jack Daniels, in that Matic lid. And with one touch of that fun button, it disperses a shot into your mixer, down there with your ice, your Coke, whatever it is. You can have vodka, you can have gin, you can have tequila. We choose Jack Daniel's Tennessee Sour Mash Whiskey, and you have your cocktail for the day. Remember to enjoy it in moderation. Never allow underage drinking. Be safe. But FlaskCap supports the culture of the American outdoorsman, the American outdoor enthusiast. And they keep it safe, they keep it ethical, and they keep it fun. The entire brand, the culture, the messaging is exactly what we're all about here at The Foul Life. We're proud and honored to be teamed up with FlaskCap. Check them out at FlaskCap, FlaskCap.com. And you are going to be so happy and take pride. Get your name on it. Get your logo engraved on it. Again, it's all about moderation. It's all about safety. Be careful with that fun button. One is enough. Two can be a lot of fun. Three is way too many. But you're going to keep that glass out of the boat, off of those beaches, and you're going to have a blast consuming alcohol through the flask cap. Again, thank you for supporting flask cap. I'm Chad Belding with the Foul Life Podcast and the Foul Life Television. Thank you all very much.
You've been listening to Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody with Chad Belding, Rob Knatzer, and Coach Jake McKinley of Nevada Baseball. And it was powered by Bad Boy Mowers and Tractors.
We appreciate you being on the show. I want you to come back because there's a lot of things I want to talk about.
Anytime, man.
You know what I'm saying?
This. Yeah, anytime.
This has been another episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody podcast with Rob from Triple S, Coach Jake McKinley from the University of Nevada Reno Baseball Program. Thank you all for listening to another episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody.
We're dropping new episodes regularly, so listen to This Life Ain't For Everybody anytime on SoundCloud, iHeart, Spotify, and thislifeaintforeverybody.com. Thanks for tuning in.